From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Happy anniversary to Amanda from your husband, Tim. He's been sending me emails, so there you go. And by the way, thanks to Donna in Detroit for rescuing my mother. I'll tell you about it during open lines a little bit later on. What a story. Here's what's happening. As the battlefield use of commercial drones by ISIS extremists becomes more prevalent and sophisticated, there's growing concern now that these unmanned aircraft systems could be used in terror attacks inside the United States. Now, we talked about this last week. Drones, relatively inexpensive, easily purchased online or at a local retail store, have been modified by ISIS fighters to drop grenades or to surveil troop movements overseas. The terror group continues to bolster its use of weaponized and surveillance drones against Iraqi and U.S. forces. Back in April, the U.S. Central Command said that coalition troops have as many as had 30 encounters a week with unmanned aerial vehicles. And they're warning, just be on guard. The United States plans to carry out a new test of its THAAD missile system against an intermediate-range ballistic missile in coming days as tensions with North Korea climb. Now, while Secretary of State Rex Tillerson emerged from the sit-down between President Trump and Vladimir Putin, claiming the U.S. president confronted the Russian leader on election meddling, it didn't take long for Tillerson's counterpart to provide Moscow's version of the events. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told reporters that Mr. Trump had actually accepted Putin's assurances that Moscow was not behind the meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Trump administration officials quickly pushed back, telling reporters at the G20 summit in Germany that the Russians' account was not accurate. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis. John, regardless, I'm glad the two leaders met, aren't you?
Oh, I think it's a tremendous relief. It should be for all. You know, it's unfortunate the way it's reported in the media, George, because really Trump is the only one that could have pulled this off. We're talking about 8 prior years of icy relations with Putin. Obama looked, when he was with Putin, like a deer caught in the headlights. He was extremely uncomfortable. Putin and Trump met for an hour and 45 minutes longer than they were expected. That doesn't happen unless people are having a pretty good time together. And all accounts are that the rapport and chemistry between Trump and Putin was excellent. In other words, potentially turning a corner on two nuclear superpowers that over the last few years and months have been pushed literally to the brink of a military confrontation. I think anyone with any objectivity about this has to look at this as a positive event. We are on the threshold right now of a very ominous situation on the Korean Peninsula.
Yes.
Tillerson, you know, said today, and he echoed the view of Abe in Japan and Jin-in in Korea, that we're running out of diplomatic options. Putin holds some leverage with Kim. He can put the hammer down. And, you know, we've been relying heavily on China. I think that with Putin on the U.S. side, if we can get beyond these petty issues related to the election. Now, some people think, well, this is so significant. They meddled in our election. Well, you know, the U.S. meddled too in the Russian elections, and very few people are reporting on that right now. But lots of propaganda about Putin being a dictator, being a this and that, creating rioting in the streets of Moscow. Both countries do the same thing to each other and just don't admit it.
Well, and when they talk about meddling, John, they're not saying that we, as Bev Harris has been warning us over the years about black box voting, but they're not accusing the Russians of getting into the election boxes and playing with the votes, are they?
No, they're not.
No.
What they're talking about is the typical day-in and day-out spy-versus-spy propaganda that goes on both sides of the Atlantic. We do it. We have the CIA, the U.S. Information Agency. They have the FSB, the former KGB, they engage in fake news and put stories on Facebook. We put stories on Facebook and other social media areas. But the bottom line is now that there's, for the first time in 8 years, a potential for building on something that was a positive event. And I think we should all be pleased that the meeting with Trump went so well.
Have yourself a good weekend, John Curtis. OnlineColumnist.com is John's website. A 72-year-old woman nearly lost her left hand after contracting flesh-eating bacteria while fishing with her husband on Alabama's Gulf Coast last week. The woman reportedly reached into a bucket of live shrimp bait and pricked the back of her hand, though it was not clear if the infection was a result of the shrimp or the water that they were fishing in, and then it entered the wound. Jeez, that bacteria is unbelievable. The U.S. job market roared back to life in June with a better-than-expected 222,000 new positions created in June, while the unemployment rate fell to 4.4%, according to the government. Economists surveyed by Reuters had been expecting non-farm payrolls growth of 179,000, so we exceeded that. Imagine telepathy, that you could transmit your thoughts to a computer or to another person just by thinking about it. In just 8 years, the founder of Open Water, Mary Lou Jepson, says it will happen thanks to technology her company is working on. They'll put like a cap-like device on your head, and they'll be able to communicate that way. We'll find out. We're going to probably do an interview with her. It's an amazing story right there. A meteor with the explosive power of 10 cruise missiles has struck the moon, sparking a massive explosion visible with the naked eye. It was a 56,000-mile-an-hour collision. Now, the rock weighed no more than 88 pounds, but it really kicked up a lot of dust. Thank God they didn't hit us. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Boy, lots going on, George, and I'll close with two really intriguing cases. One tonight, from tonight in Pennsylvania, one from last night down near San Diego. But before I get into them, I'd like to correct a couple errors I made last week.
You never make mistakes, Peter.
Pardon?
You never make mistakes.
Well, I would like to believe that, but the Coast audience knows better, and boy, it's hard to get anything by these people. But as you may recall, I closed last week with a comment about a very dramatic event that had been reported from about 10 states on the East Coast for the morning of the 29th of June. And, of course, it was the missile launch out of Wallops Island facility on Chincoteague
Island. One of our listeners pointed that out to you, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, they did. And I'm grateful they did it very politely, as you would expect
of course.
Those listeners. But in any event, it was a very dramatic event. And we got some photographs of what it looked like. There's no surprise that it was reported by a lot of people all up and down the East Coast. And anyway, my gratitude to the Coast listeners for setting me straight on that so I didn't get buried too deeply. Also, my second error last week was I forgot to tell the listeners to be on the qui vive, to be particularly vigilant for any anomalous object or event on the 4th of July. But of course, again, the Coast audience was well ahead of me. We got about 60 reports for the 4th of July, George. By way of comparison, that's, we got 7 for the evening of the 4th of June. We got 50 to 60 for the evening of the 4th of July during fireworks displays. I urge anybody who's interested in the UFO phenomenon to look at the reports from the 4th of July this year. Really very, very interesting reports and dramatic. And I wish to emphasize that they're in no way related to the fireworks displays. And we posted, I think we posted a photograph of one of the objects or clusters of objects that were seen during a fireworks display. But to close off tonight, I'd like to talk about a very dramatic event that occurred near Warner Springs, California. That's up northeast of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
West of Borrego Springs. Guy was driving in a He was annoyed by a car that came up right behind him at 65 miles an hour, which was his speed, and he slowed down to about 50, and the guy stuck with him, slowed down to 40. Suddenly, the car just disappeared from his sight. And at that time, just at the instant the car disappeared, he saw what he thought was a hairless coyote standing and leaning against a fence post.
Like a chupacabra or something.
Yeah, something straight out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And it's very interesting. I urge people to read his account. We just received an addendum from him, and I've added it to the report since we updated our website. And tonight, a very dramatic report in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, right across the Monongahela River from McKeesport, Pennsylvania. I urge people to read that report. I think we have it posted. If not, we'll have it posted over the weekend. And family saw fluorescent or phosphorescent sphere in solid clouds. I'll leave the rest of the story for the next report.
You got it. Peter, thank you so much. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. And as we continue talking about UFOs, Joshua P. Warren, who's normally chasing ghosts all over the place, has got something new for us called OUFO, and we'll have him explain that live from Puerto Rico next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Joshua P. Warren with us for the next couple hours, internationally recognized expert on mysterious and paranormal phenomena. He's based out of Asheville, North Carolina, but spends lots of his time in Puerto Rico, where he is now. Josh, what are you doing out there?
Well, George, I have a really interesting discovery to announce on the program tonight. Here I am in Puerto Rico. I'll only be here for a couple more weeks before I head back to the States. I've got a lot of, actually, some TV production work I'll be doing this year.
Perfect.
But you know, George, I have been investigating strange activity here in the Bermuda Triangle for well over a decade. But for the past 4 years, I have been especially focusing on the particularly strange UFOs that are seen and often captured on film here in Puerto Rico, right here in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. And after all these years, I think I can finally say that I have this new discovery. And you and Tom were a significant part of this discovery. And after I explain all this, I have a serious call to action for the listeners that I think will produce some astounding results among the audience. So I look forward to that. So first off, I condensed my findings over the past 4 years and my case into a 12-minute video report, and
which I watched tonight. It was amazing.
Well, thank you very much, because it's easy to watch 12 minutes, but boy, it took a lot of work to come here and get people to talk and open up and to collect the information that went into that. And in order to sort of explain what I'm talking about here, first off, coasttocoastam.com has a link. Sean put some great photographs up there for tonight. I also have some enhancements of different parts of the images on my website, joshuapwarren.com. So I'm going to start, George, by recapping some of the things that we have talked about before here on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay.
Starting with that Homeland Security footage from 2013. And, of course, that's the thing that I started the video with. And for listeners who are not familiar with what I'm talking about, in 2013, at the Rafael Hernandez Airport, which is in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, an infrared thermal Homeland Security camera captured this amazing object flying around about 9:20 p.m., zipping around the airport. And when you see this footage, the object, it has a slightly saucer shape, but it's also kind of irregular. It seems to almost have a shape-shifting kind of appearance. It's zooming at up to 120 miles per hour all around this, you know, protected zone. I mean, they had to ground the flights going in and out of the airport. You can imagine how potentially dangerous this was. And most incredibly, as you're watching this footage, you see this object actually dip into the ocean. You can continue seeing it underneath the surface of the water. It goes into the water without a splash, really. It zooms right in, continues to travel 95 miles per hour under the surface of the water. When it emerges, it is accompanied by a second object. These two objects sort of dip in and out of the water a bit, and then they finally dip into the ocean for good and disappear. And mind you, that spot is not too far from the deepest point in the Atlantic Ocean, the Puerto Rico Trench, which is almost 30,000 feet deep. So if you put Mount Everest down in this trench, all you'd see is the little tip of Everest sticking up out of it.
And these objects were about 3 to 5 feet long?
That's exactly right. They're relatively small. And we can tell, because this is thermal imaging, that there was a slight temperature difference between the inside and the outside of the object. The inside was a little over 100 degrees. And it didn't change that dramatically when the object went into the water and came out of the water. Now, I saw this footage, and by the way, when that footage was captured, there was a buzz all over this island, because it is an island, and everybody kind of knows everybody in one way or another, even though there are 3.5 million people here.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of gossip, like, oh my gosh, you know, my brother works at Homeland Security, and they captured something, blah, blah, blah. But it took a while before this was leaked onto the internet. Well, around that same time, I started getting these other bits of imaging coming in from around the island, people capturing these similar bizarre-looking UFOs. They all have that kind of rough appearance. They don't look necessarily like some kind of a structured metallic object. They have that dark, again, slightly saucer shape, but also kind of an irregular shape that almost seems to sort of shape shift a little bit. And it's around that time that I met a man here named Daniel Velez. And he really helped me sort of put a new spin, I guess, on what I might be seeing here and why these were different. Daniel Velez explained to me on camera that he is a descendant of the Taino Indians. Now, the Tainos lived here on this island for thousands of years. They were here when Columbus arrived in 1493. And they were unfortunately very quickly enslaved by the Spaniards and worked practically to extinction. But he told me, Daniel, that over the years, it was common knowledge among Taino descendants that these objects existed, and that you could actually go out and use a very simple technique to invite them mentally, you might say telepathically, to appear.
And they just show up.
Absolutely, that they are conscious sensitive. And he demonstrated this for me. He went out, and you can see him actually in the video. He takes his cell phone, closes his eyes, and he sort of scans from left to right, especially over the water. And he showed me some of these astounding images of these bizarre things that would appear practically on command. So I was inspired by him to try this out for myself, but I wanted to do it on a grand scale. So, of course, I came to you, George, and I said, hey, let's work together and do an experiment. This was in 2014 on the 37th anniversary of the WOW signal. That seemed like a fitting symbolic time to do this, in which you record a message, George, inviting these visitors to appear at a certain set of coordinates. In the meantime,
I'm the reason for the invasion, aren't I?
You never know. And you recorded this message. We transmitted this into outer space on that date. We had all the listeners sending their telepathic wishes out. We had people like Dr. Mulder set up a bunch of wishing machines so that we had mind-powered technology working toward this goal. And I had a webcam set up at this set of coordinates. And astoundingly, at that set of coordinates that day, one of these objects appeared over top of the webcam, zipped straight up into the sky, and made a whistling sound. Now, you remember I came on Coast to Coast AM that night, and we were jumping up and down with excitement because we got this.
Oh, yeah, that was huge. Josh, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back for more as we talk about this discovery of yours. And wait till you hear what Joshua's theory is. It truly is remarkable. I'm George Norrie, and we will be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Joshua P. Warren with us. He's live in Puerto Rico. Joshua, I hear most of the Puerto Ricans would love to become our 51st state, huh?
Yes, that's right. It's been that way for a long time. They have voted on a number of occasions to become a state, but, you know, the problem is that I think right now, as always, the United States have a lot to gain by keeping Puerto Rico as a territory.
Yeah.
And one of those reasons is that they actually do experiments here all the time. This is not a conspiracy theory. There is a well-documented list of experiments, military and otherwise, that have always taken place here in Puerto Rico. And there is very little accountability for how some of those experiments turn out. And plus, right now, everybody hears about the economic woes that Puerto Rico has. And so who wants to take on that debt?
Well, they're probably better than Illinois, though.
Well, who knows? At this point, everybody's got some kind of an economic problem, it seems like. But on the other hand, 50 has a really nice ring to it. So I don't see 51 being the number anytime soon, I must admit.
All right, let's go back to your exercise and experiment.
Yeah, so, okay, now, so here we have all of this amazing footage of this strange-looking form of UFO flying around the island, being captured in a variety of ways. Then I meet this descendant of the Taínos who is able to show me some of the best footage and explain that he gets this stuff by telepathically communicating with them, which is a tradition long held by the Taíno. Then I go out and initiate this project that you were involved with, where we ask one to show up, and sure enough, we get footage of one of these things as well as audio. So at that point, I thought, okay, there must be something, or there could certainly be something to this whole Taíno-Indian connection. And so I started digging deeper into that. And I came across this very odd-looking type of artifact that looks strikingly similar to these objects flying around. Now, we're talking sculptures the Taíno did that are well over 1,000 years old of these little idols called Semí, and that's spelled C-E-M-I. And in fact, Coast to Coast AM has a picture of one of these Semí, and I even went to the Semí Museum up in the mountains here and looked at a bunch of these things. They are extremely mysterious. It's so unfortunate that the Spaniards intentionally erased as much of the Taíno culture as they could, because as you know, they were coming in dominating everything with their own beliefs. And so we know very little about the Semí, except that the Taíno considered them lesser gods that lived high up in the mountains and the sky and would come down and visit, and were so fortuitous that your higher ranking, if you will, members of the Taíno society would all have a really nice Semí idol in their homes that was incorporated in some of their most sacred rituals. And by comparing the Semis to the imagery, I started to get a clearer picture that what we might be looking at here is something that has a tradition that goes way back here in Puerto Rico. And the more I studied the way that these objects look on film, the irregular shape, the size, the way that they behave and interact, sometimes an almost playful sort of mannerism they seem to have, the fact that they respond to invitations from people to show up, especially certain people, I began to think maybe we're not looking at a machine with a little man sitting inside at the steering wheel necessarily. What if these are actually living things? What if these are organic UFOs? And that is when I thought of this term, O-U-F-O. Now, I am not the first person to propose something along these lines.
And that's how you pronounce it, O-U-F-O. Not,
that's right.
Not UFO, huh?
No, I just call it an OUFO, and so people are much, you know, they have a much clearer idea that it's related to the UFO phenomenon, but a different form. There was an author named Trevor James Constable who had proposed that some of these things in the sky might be living back in the 1950s. So he may have been on the right track, but I think we now have enough evidence that I can present a pretty strong case that we need to explore the idea that these are organic UFOs. And furthermore, there is a picture at coasttocoastam.com of me sitting on a beach surrounded by a bunch of magic wands. And there's an interesting story behind that. I have a friend named Santero Longley. He is a very esteemed Santero here on the island of Puerto Rico who lives in San Juan. And he makes traditional magic wands. And he gave me a bunch of his wands, and I went out on the beach one day to follow his instructions and to charge them under the sun next to the water. So here I am sitting on the beach. I have all these wands stuffed into the sand around me. And all I was doing was shooting footage of me sitting there charging the wands. Well, lo and behold, when I watch the footage, guess what I see flying around overhead?
There you go.
One of these OUFOs. And I thought, boy, you know, these wands are supposed to transmit thought. They're supposed to transmit intention. And so I actually went out and created a wand using magnetic fields with these, I mean, super-powered rare earth neodymium magnets assembled into this wand. You can see this on my website, joshuapwarren.com. And when you take this thing out and hold it up in the sky and you send out a mental invitation, you almost inevitably get some kind of an appearance of one of these strange things.
Now, when you say, though, they're organic, that means they're alive. They're not insects, right? They're not like UFO insects, are they?
No, I believe that this may be a form of life that has, it's again, you know, 3 to 5, maybe 3 to 6 feet in diameter, according to scientific analysis. And let me explain something. When I say organic, a lot of people think that I am automatically referring to something that relates to the warm, fleshy things like you and me. But if you take a human and you look at that person under a microscope, you find iron and copper and zinc and sulfur and magnesium and all of these materials that we usually think of as being inanimate. And so it's possible that they are living in organic, but all these components are just arranged in a slightly different way. I mean, think a tree is organic. Look how different it appears from a human. An insect is organic. Some of these weird things we see at the bottom of the ocean are organic. And so it may be that these are UFOs, but they also are the aliens themselves. And I have, therefore, a call to action for people listening right now who may have some doubts about what I'm saying. In the video, George, I think one of the most impressive things is that I realized as I was putting this report together that 2,700 miles away in Denver, Colorado, other researchers were catching strikingly similar things flying around, and that even made the mainstream TV news in Denver, Colorado.
Right.
And so it may be that these things are not just here in the Bermuda Triangle, but they might be flying around us a lot more often than we think. The problem is, however, that they are flying at a very high rate of speed most of the time.
These are not what Jose Escamilla has called rods, are they?
No, okay. No, not at all. I believe from the very beginning that rods were simply the product of the wing beats of insects, especially moths and things like that, showing up on camera because the shutter speed was a little too slow and the interlacing created an illusion like that.
Sure.
And so I never have felt that rods were a real phenomenon. But here's what I think. How many people out there are pointing a camera in the sky and letting it run for 30 minutes, an hour, and then sitting down and watching that footage?
Not a lot of people. Motion. Not a lot.
And slow motion is the key here. So I want everyone listening to this program who has an interest in this to take whatever camera that you have, doesn't matter if it's your cell phone, go out on a clear day, point it at the sky. Don't point it at the sun because that could damage your camera. Record for as long as you can, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour. But then you're going to have to sit down and watch it in slow motion. Now, what you find is that it's pretty easy to rule out insects and birds and things like that because, for one thing, we have high definition now, so you can see most of the details of insects and birds. And also, they move in a very predictable fashion, sort of in one side of the frame and across to the other side. These things look very, very different. They move in a different kind of zigzag way. Sometimes they just disappear and then reappear. Sometimes they shoot straight up into the sky. They look very different. And the holy grail, I believe, would be to get a high-speed camera, the kind we use to see a bullet slow down when it's zipping through the air, and to point a high-speed camera in the air at some of these hot spots. And I almost guarantee you that we'll see some of these things flying around. And I want anybody who goes out there and gets some footage like this to please go to my website and send me an email and send me your footage. And I think that we might be overwhelmed because, sure, a lot of people without experience are going to become maybe uncertain about what they're getting and how to differentiate one thing from another when it comes to insects and birds on some occasions. But for the most part, I think it will be pretty obvious that this may actually be a new form of life that is synonymous with the UFO phenomenon, but different than some of these spaceships, if you will, that seem to be coming here from other planets or dimensions.
Have these things shown any acts of aggression or anything like that?
No, that's the good news. It appears that if these OUFOs have developed such a connection to humanity that they are literally operating in sympathy with our thoughts, then it means that they have probably been here for a long time. They are very familiar with people. It's possible that they have been around longer than people have. They may be the original Earthlings for all we know. And but there is no reason to believe whatsoever that they mean us any harm. I mean, even when you see the one flying around the airport, I mean, that is a potentially highly dangerous situation. I'm surprised that more of the mainstream media has not picked up with that story and run with it, because nobody knew, and still nobody knows what these things are. But even in that situation, again, you almost interpret the behavior of this thing as almost playful, just kind of zipping around and dipping in and out of the water. And when you see this thing go from 120 miles per hour into the water and skim under the water at 95 miles per hour.
And you could see it just under the surface of the water. You can just see these things right underneath the water.
Yeah, and it's because it's so great that it's a thermal camera of all things that captured this and that that gave us the ability to see even more information, to get even more data there. And in fact, a group of mainstream scientists authenticated this footage and wrote a highly detailed 162-page report about this. And there is a link. If you go to joshuapwarren.com and you click the link to the OUFO page, you'll see the video, you'll see the press release, you'll see a bunch of the enhancements that I've done there, but you'll also find a link you can click to get a PDF, a free PDF of their 162-page report where they break this thing down better than any breakdown I've ever seen of any kind of UFO. And it just goes to show that, we are so fortunate that this was not something that was captured by some amateur out there on his cell phone. No, this is expensive technology. It's a camera that gives us additional layers of data. And this is serious evidence. I would say the best evidence I've ever seen for the fact that this UFO, or in this case, OUFO phenomenon, is real.
You've done a lot of extensive research here, Josh. You seem to have branched out, too. I mean, you used to be just ghosts and chupacabras. You've branched out a lot now, haven't you?
Well, I've certainly found over these past 25 years that, to a certain degree, in my opinion, all these things seem to be connected. It reminds me of that great quote by Charles Fort: "You can measure a circle beginning anywhere." And I think that one of the things that connects everything is just the relationship between matter and energy, how something goes from one state of matter to another state of matter, as well as how time and space seem to change around these events. So let's say something like this OUFO, you might look at that and you might say, well, the way this thing seems to defy the laws of physics and slip in and out of the water, it almost has an apparitional sort of component, like it's not fully interacting with the physical world, which seems kind of ghostly. On the other hand, you might say, well, this is something cryptozoological. It's just some type of a creature that we, you know, is maybe operating here within the normal boundaries, but it's operating in a way that we don't understand. Then, of course, we have ultimately what is a UFO. It's an unidentified flying object, so it applies there. Then you have the fact that this thing is appearing in conjunction with those who get out and are inviting it to appear. So now we have a psychic connection, or an ESP-oriented telepathic connection, and you see that some of these things cannot be addressed by one particular perspective alone. And I always believe that when you go out to investigate something mysterious, you should not pick and choose the parts of the phenomenon that you want to try to tackle. You have to go in and accept everything that you see, no matter if you understand it or not, or if you think it fits into your plan or your hypothesis or not. And sometimes you start out thinking you're looking at one thing, and it turns out you're looking at something else. But in that case, it can be even more fantastic because it combines qualities of all of these things that we don't understand.
Well, these are strange objects, Josh. As I looked at that video that you sent me tonight, 3 to 5 feet long, very strange looking, no wings, not disc shape, but it was hard to describe what kind of shape it had. Didn't you find that to be the case?
I did, because for one thing, it's easy right off the bat to say, okay, there's no visible means of traditional propulsion. There's no rotor. There are no wings. This is certainly not a drone. I mean, when you see it travel in and out of the water like that at those speeds, it leaves no doubt. And I think that this might be able to shape-shift somewhat, because it's able to adjust maybe in a millisecond, maybe molecule by molecule, to whatever environment that it's passing through. And in studying how these things are moving, I wondered if they're always moving, or if they're usually moving so fast, how is it that the Taino may have been able to see them? And I discovered that it was very common for the Taino medicine men, if you want to call them that, I think they were called the Bohique. They would take these beans from a tree called the Cohabana tree, and they'd grind them up into a powder and snort it. And they would have this ritual called the Cohoba, in which they would convene with the spirits. And nobody's exactly sure how that affected them, but it may be that that slowed down their perception of time, and it changed the wavelengths they were able to see, and that this allowed them to literally see things that the brain would not usually be able to process. But now we have this technology, and the funny thing is, yes, we have all these cameras, but we're not pointing them in the sky and watching the footage in slow motion, and that's what we need everybody to do now.
Josh, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about ghosts and ghost hunting, and of course we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.